Okay, today is Tuesday, June 22nd, 2004, and I'm here with Miss Elizabeth Hudson Hall. She was born at Freedman Hospital, Washington, D.C., July 28th, 1930. I'm just going to ask you a couple questions, and feel free to answer or not answer. Let's start with your education. Where did you attend elementary school?
I attended elementary school at the Falls Church Color School in Falls Church, Virginia. Okay. Which is now where James Lee is. And my teacher there was Mrs. Lola Saunders and Mrs. Nellie Henderson. And I went there from the kindergarten through the seventh grade. Then at that particular time, they didn't have any schools, academic schools for the blacks to go to in Northern Virginia area. So I went to school, junior high, at Francis Junior High School in D.C., and from there, I went to Dunbar, and I graduated from Dunbar in 1948.
And can you tell me what a typical elementary school day was like for you from the time you got up in the morning?
Actually, not knowing anymore then that you were all segregated, that you were all black children there. We went there, we had reading, writing, arithmetic, learning of vowels, and history, geography. We had everything which children don't have now in school, in elementary school. We know how to do fractions and addition things. Miss Nellie used to have a board up there where it teaches how to do our penmanship, and we said prayers in the morning, and it was, we had recess, and during that time we had May Day. We had different activities going on at other holidays, and we walked to school no matter what days it was, and we had a stove in the center of the school to keep the heat in, and it was only two rooms. We went from one room to the other, from the kindergarten to the third grade, but in Miss Lola's room, from the fourth to the seventh grade, we were in Miss Nellie's room.
Do you remember any particular thing about how the building looked?
Oh, yeah. It was just a white building. In fact, I got some pictures of it. It's on my thing I have at the center over there. It's just a white building. Door you go in this side for Miss Lola's, door you go in this side for Miss Nellie, frame building. Behind there was outdoor toilets for the boys, for the girls and boys outside. And you walk up the steps. It's a white frame building. And a couple windows on the side and windows on this side. And entrance to Miss Lola's room. And then you go through Miss Lola's room to Miss Nellie's room after you leave the third grade. And then steps up to her room. Really, it was nothing but what we consider now shacks. Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about your high school education?
My high school education was very, very nice. I went to Francis Junior High School. And, of course, you had to keep a certain degree of grades before you could attend different other high schools. So we had a guidance counselor before when we graduated. I went there from the eighth and ninth grades of Francis Junior High School. And Mrs. Plummer was our principal there. And we had a guidance teacher there who would talk with us at graduation, before graduation, and according to our grades and what we majored in, basically there would direct us to the proper school we would want to go to. If we're contemplating of going to college or want something in the academic field, they told us we go to Dunbar. If you want to go into the business world, you go to Cadoza. Into the industrial world, you go to Armstrong or Phelps. But that particular time, my idea was to go to college, and go into the medical field. But that's why I went to Dunbar. But if your grades went up to par, they would recommend you to go to the other school because whether you'd be able to compete in that school or not with the academic skills. So I went there and I graduated from Dunbar. Then after I came out of Dunbar, I met my husband and so I was supposed to go to Howard University. I met my husband and I got married. And then I worked for the federal government.
Okay.
And I worked in the federal government for 39 and a half years. I retired as a Chief of Acquisition, Technical Information Specialist, PE, Physical Science and Engineer degree, which I didn't get the degree, but I had the qualification for it by working in the field that I was working in, so federal government would do that for you. So that was in 1981, that's when I retired. And I enjoyed working, believe me, I really enjoyed it. I worked for acquisition. It was very challenging because I dealt with classified information Now dealing with NATO and different people all overseas and whatnot, and people want some information, they would call there, and I had to go search the information for them. And 9 times out of 10, I was so dedicated. My husband used to tell me all the time, "You think moving your job, you think of your own house." But I'm like that. When I'm into something, I'm all the way.
Right.
And if I don't want to do it, I'm not going to do it. But if I say I'm going to do it, I'm into it whole heart, and I expect people work with me to be the same way. Because I'm for efficiency all the time, and accepting responsibility and efficiency. That's my number one thing. And I've always been at home on the job, which I work in the center now. I'm the same way. They call me, my daughter called me the warden. And she said, because I say, well, when you go by the rules, you don't have to, you have no repercussions. But if you don't go by the rules, you can have some repercussions because somebody can blast you about it, you know?
Right.
And so I try to stick with the rules. And well, one day they come in one day, man said, "Man, you're a fantastic teacher, weren't you?" And I said, "No, I was a teacher." I said, "Why do you say that?" He said, "You seem to have everything here in order." I said, "That's me. That's not a bit of teacher. You got some teachers don't have things in order at all, you know?" But I enjoy working with the kids now because it's challenging. And all they got to do is say, "Here comes Miss Hall." That's my granddaughter. That's my granddaughter.
Hi.
That's Monique. They say, "Here comes Miss Hall." But it's fun working with the Lord. I get a challenge. I really get a challenge out of him, you know, because it sort of takes you back with your own, more or less, you know. But I give it to kids over there from age 6 on up to 18. I mean, at night, 16, 17, 18 years old, they can't come in until 8 o'clock at night time because they're considered adults. And during that time, I give them, ask them, "Are y'all voting yet?" And I'll say, "Yep, here's a registration form. Fill it out so you'll be able to vote." But it's very challenging working over there with the people, older seniors, and I don't work directly with them. We have kind of all kind of groups coming forth, so you know. But it's very challenging working with the public, and I also work with the Democratic Party, so I can say that. And I like that too, you know. And in a sense, I'm an activist because I'm always in. I work in my community here. I'm on the board of directors here at our center. I'm with the Springdale Civic Association. I belong to the Black Women United for Action group. I'm also the National Negro Women Council group, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Belong to NAACP. So I'm always doing something, you know. You have to do that, really. Keep your body active and your mind active. When you sit back and do nothing, everything starts going down on you.
Mm-hmm. You talked about work in the federal government. When did you start working in the government?
19. I got married in 1948. I mean, 49.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm being interviewed by a lady. Okay. I got married June 13th of 1949. I started working in the federal government in August of that year. And that's when I went to work for the Veterans Administration. And from the VA, I went to Civil Service Retirement Division. And from then, I went to Armed Tactical Information Agency, and I was there until I retired.
Now, did you experience, when you worked for the federal government, any issues surrounding race and segregation?
Exactly,
and that sort of
exactly.
Okay.
You could barely get into GS-2 for the blacks, no matter how much education you had. So then, that particular time, when I worked in the VA, you get efficiency ratings, and your efficiency rating count, if you got excellent, you count 5 points. Now, 5 points will go around. Added to the amount of years you have, which I only had 1 year then on probation. After probation, I was made permanent. But they gave me 6 points. And people who got less than that, who had been there more time, longer than I had, got riffed. They always have this with the blacks especially.
Mm-hmm.
So they finally, the second year they had to riff me, but then they placed me at the Civil Service Commission, the Retirement Division, went down as a GS-2. And I just couldn't see any way of getting ahead at all because the guys who had college education, master's degree, they were adjudicators and highest they were GS-9.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, I know it's tough for me to get out of here. Fortunately, I had a friend that worked for Library of Congress, and he was a supervisor over there. And he worked for a part of Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, was part of it was in Ohio, and part was the Library of Congress. So they moved the whole, both parts of the agency together out at Allison Hall. So I applied for a position out there as a GS-3, and I never looked back. It's kept going until I got to GS-2. It's kept going and going and going, and I made it to GS-12. And I loved it. I loved the work there. I really loved it. Got to acquisition thing. I was a bibliographer, Then I did a couple of BBRs. I did one on Agent Orange, mm-hmm. and a couple more I did too down at the agency. And because we sold documents and whatnot that came into our agency, and people had to pay for them through the federal government. Mm-hmm. And then we had the guys would write this information up. They would come in and pick out of the thesaurus the words that were in the document. That's how we could retrieve the information for them. Mm-hmm. But it was challenging, and I really liked it. I really liked acquisition because I got a sustained superior performance award from, that was $500, and Harry Chapman got from my supervisor, and he said, without Mrs. Hall, I wouldn't know acquisition, he would say. Mm-hmm. And he would say, she knows the A through the N, acquisition. But I loved it. I loved the work, and I like something. I'm going to put all my whole heart and body into doing it. So it was very challenging, and it was awesome. Absolutely awesome.
What can you tell me about Tenor Hill?
Tenor Hill, it's been up there for umpteen years because all the tenants lived up there. Mm-hmm. And we used to go up there years ago. We used to walk up there and walk down by the, I think it was a stone quarry down there.
Right.
And we used to walk up there all the time. And the tenor's all on Miss Rose, Mom Rose Tenor. We used to call her. She lived up on the corner up there. We used to go to Mom Rose's house. Mm-hmm. And God, it's been so long ago. God, in fact, Mr. Melvin Tenor was her husband that built the house that my sister lives in up in there, where my mom built my mom's house. And Mr. Wentz Tenor, who lives on the corner over there, and his that son, Joe Tenor, and I were good friends. We grew up together, Joe Tenor. And I think he named after his father, the great-grandfather, who was one of the ones that started the NAACP.
Right.
And Joe, he died young. Joe, Winnie Desk, and me. I used to be so tomboyish when I was coming up, you know. God, it's been so long.
What types of things did you all do?
We played, we had a place called a field right over behind where all these, called a field now. I don't know, it's up there where, across from Hillwood Avenue, all those condominiums built over there now. It's a big, I think they still have it over there. They play soccer on that field now. We used to call it a field. We used to go in and we play football. We play all kinds of games. So at that particular time, children had nothing else to do but play things like that. Mm-hmm. And I was just a reference for the boys, believe me. Mm-hmm. We played football, we played baseball, we played anything that, because we had nothing. And even to the basket, we used to put the basket up on the tree and throw the ball to the basket, you know, because that particular time, everything we did was physical. Mm-hmm. It was nothing like the kids now push a button and whatnot, you know. And that's why I think we never had the kind of problems that children have now with obesity so young, mm-hmm. because we were very active. And games and stuff we played, we shot marbles. And the kids used to tease me, but they were talking about the other day when my sister-in-law died. I said, I remember when Aunt Sugar came down, she won all our marbles. I said, we were playing for Keith, weren't we? And my grandfather used to do that. He used to teach marbles with us. We were kids. And he taught us how to do a lot of things like that. So, and it was, like I say, it was quite physical, everything we did, you know. Not violent physically. But it was physical activities we did, so that's what kept our bodies going, you know. We play Amy over, throw the ball over the roof, you know, and then you run around, hit the person with the ball, maybe out, you know. And these kind of games, hopscotch and may I and those kind of things, but we're trying to get the kids out of their interest in those type of things now. Because that's a challenging thing, too. Can you forget or you listen to what I'm saying, you know?
Right.
So it had its good points. It had its good points. And I think the children nowadays should get more interested in those type of things, too. But Tenor Hill, as I say, that's where the tenants living up there, basically. And we used to walk up through there, going out to the quarry, because everything you did there seemed like a long distance now. But that was nothing but a hopscotch jump for us kids to walk, you know. And as I say, most of the kids we had up there, there wasn't too many around my age, because most of them were grown people living up there. The older ones lived there. Except Mom Rose, she had a bunch of foster children. One of them was Harold Young, because he just died here recently. And another guy named was Ernest, I can't remember his last name. But she had foster kids. That was Mom Rose Tenor. We call her Mom Rose. And she's married to Mr. Melvin Tenor, which is Mr. Winston's brother. And so the Tenors live down there now on, I think it's called, I forget what it's called now, but it's across the street. A little house right on the corner in Falls Church off of Street, Annadale Road. It used to be called Shreve Road, now it's called Annadale Road.
How did your parents prepare you for living in a segregated society?
Actually, believe it or not, when you're living like that, you don't realize it. Because the only thing you know is the way you're living, you know. And actually, we used to have white boys used to come by there to deliver the paper. The next last name was Tatum's. So my brother and I used to go out to their house because they were paper boys also. And my great grandmother, which looked like she was white because her father was Caucasian and her mother was Native American, mm-hmm. and she was sitting at big the house with us, and she's white skinned and white hair and long hanging down her back. So when they went to Miss Taylor's house, Miss Taylor said, "Y'all must be really rich." My brother said, "Really rich? Why?" He said, "Cause y'all got a white nanny." He said, "That's no white nanny. That's our great grandmother." So, after we never look at it like that because if you're not exposed to the type of thing when you're younger, mm-hmm. you know, you just don't. We never were taught there was any difference. Mm-hmm. My mother and father never said there was any difference that any white people were better than us or anything, you know. We were all equal people. My mother was a very good Christian woman, so was my father. But she never said this about that, but she was an activist also, believe me, because she fought for a lot of things up in Falls Church. In fact, when she wanted to get me into the Girl Scouts, they wouldn't let me in the Girl Scouts because I was African American and there was only Caucasian troops out there. So she went to school and took the class to be a counselor to start the Girl Scouts for me to join. And so just all the girls in Falls Church joined. My father started the Boy Scouts. So then, when you got older, you start feeling these things, see, because when you're younger, it didn't bother us because we weren't exposed to it. And they say, "We can't have this." We can say, "Well, so, can't have it, you know." But sometimes I wonder if it should have stayed that way because of what is happening now with the kids, you know, because mm-hmm. they're exposed to so many things, disrespectfulness and education not being the same. When we're going to black school, you knew something when you come to that school, believe me. You didn't come out of Miss Nellie's room or Miss Lowe's room unless you knew your work and had good grades or whatnot. Because now they're passing children's school. As you see, some of the players out here and there can't even read or write. I mean, multimillionaires up here, basketball players. Half of them, a lot, I can't say half of them, but I was reading the article the other day. So a lot of them can't even read and have no education, per se, intelligence, so far as book learning is concerned. But they got the money because of the athletic abilities. And they don't have it upstairs, you know, and that's sad. But if they came up with Miss Lowe and Miss Nellie, they'd have it upstairs. Believe me. Or during the time before the school were desegregated. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, integration has its good point, but it had an awful, awful lot of bad points for the African-American. It really does, because I just can't see how these kids, I look at some of them, too. Now, my daughters, I say all of them are pretty smart, but her mother was the one that... I had a little problem and she wouldn't go to school. She said, "I'm not learning anything." Mm-hmm. And so I had to take her out and put her in an alternate school, which is up on Cherry Street in Falls Church, under Miss Chandler, which I got to commend her because she was a quite a lady. And she said, "Oh, I finally got my little chocolate girl here." I said, "What do you mean? Black people don't put the children in school when they don't want to go?" She said, "No." She said, "I don't have them up here. In fact, they weren't aware of this second chance that children could get then." So she went up there. She made the honor roll, got accepted to Virginia State. So it's a difference because she said she's actually been in the schools herself. And she said, "They're not teaching the kids anything." So, and I've heard this from so many children and so many people. I look at some of the kids that have the teenage boys can't even write the name decently. They come and say, "What is this? How am I supposed to read this? You know? I got a father. I can't follow if I can't read it." Mm-hmm. But they're just not being taught.
Now, were your children in school when the desegregation changed, mm-hmm. integration?
It had already changed. Okay. In 1954, it changed, and my son was born in 59.
Oh, okay.
So they went into integrated schools. Okay, yeah, so they didn't have to go along with what I went along with, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it, she went up to Baylor. We didn't went to Baylor. They went to Baylor Elementary then, mm-hmm. because the had a school over here called Lee and Carey School. That was named after my great-great aunt. My great-great grandmother was telling you about Lee and Carey School. Lee and Carey was the great, was a teacher here in Baylor's Crossroads. Now, she's my great-grandfather's sister. The park over here is named after her, Lee and Carey Park. And the school was named after her. But when they integrated, they changed the school and bused the black children to the white school. And now this school over there is called High Horizon. It's a preschool now for free. That's what all the immigrants are there, more of them. But it's a preschool. I think it's from infants up to 5 years of age. Mm-hmm. But that was a Lee and Carey school. That's what the children went over there back then. But they integrated, so they weren't there that long. When they integrated. My kids were almost, I didn't have any kids then, really, when they started that school. But, and that, because they used to have a color school down here, too, in Baylor's Crossroads. where my husband went to. Mm-hmm. But then he went to Manassas Industrial High.
Okay.
And that's before I met him, but I didn't, Manassas didn't appeal to me because what I wanted to get into, they didn't offer.
Right.
So that's what, in fact, I used to ride to school in the morning with Dr. E.B. Henderson.
Okay.
That's Nellie Henderson's husband. Mm-hmm. And he was the head of the physical education department in D.C. So two of us, Mary Elizabeth, Mary and I, used to ride with him in the morning, on Monday morning, because we had to stay over in D.C. during the week, come back home on a Friday. Mm-hmm. So they said we had a D.C. resident or to go to school in D.C. If we didn't, we'd have to pay tuition.
Now, who did you stay with?
I stayed with my godmother on 24th and M Street, Northwest. And then I moved over with my grandmother on West Virginia Avenue when I went to Dunbar. I stayed over there. But I came back home on weekends.
Okay. Now, how were the experiences between blacks and whites in D.C. as compared to this area? Did you notice a difference?
Not really. No. Yes, we did have problems, too, in D.C. going down to downtown shopping. Mm-hmm. And whatnot, the blacks couldn't go and eat at the snack bars in the department stores and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But in D.C., the blacks had their own thing.
Okay.
They had everything, and if when they got older, they had Youth Street was fantastic. Their theater, they had everything for blacks in D.C., which Virginia didn't have.
Okay.
They had the Lincoln Theater, the Republic Theater, the Booker T. Theater, their theaters on 7th Street, and their clubs, they had restaurants, and everything with black and cool. So you really didn't care.
Mm-hmm. Now, were these black-owned businesses or just businesses?
Most of them were. Now, I can't. Yeah, well, black was run, they were run by black, right?
Okay.
Most of them. But I think they were. Most of the place was leased out by the Jews. I think the Jewish people owned just about everything in D.C.
Okay.
Back. The K-Trees and people like that owned a lot of the places in D.C. But I know one little guy I met. Used to be a drugstore. My cousin bought the place. And they turned it into like a restaurant or club, like. And this little short guy, he was the owner. He sold it to them, and he's from Italy, but he was Jewish.
Okay.
So the Jews own a lot of D.C. and but up on U Street up there, just all of them. But I think a black owned a lot of that up there too. It was a because we had the Sterlock Theater. I mean, a picture up there because the man took a great big picture of me and he had it. The picture was bigger than that thing right there. I don't know where that picture is too. Of me when I was in the, I'll show you that picture.
Okay.
And he liked the picture so much, and he put it in his showcase. And, because he died, I don't know what happened to him. That was up on 14th and, FTUGUV, and 15th and T, I think, 14th, 15th and T. But all of the black owned, all of U Street, all the area was all black. So it was all black run, so I can't say whether they're all owned by all blacks or not. But, I mean, it was safe. It was safe to walk D.C. streets, and you had all kind of restaurants you can go to, theaters. Now, my cousin, Pookie Hudson, sings Leave with the Spaniels, then, and we used to go to Howell Theater to see him. Then.
Mm-hmm.
It was called the Spaniels back then. There. Now it's Pookie Hudson, and he's still singing.
Oh, okay.
So I was supposed to go to the birthday party on there, but I didn't go. But he still sings Pookie Hudson and the Spaniels. You ever heard a piece called Goodnight, Sweetheart? Goodnight, sweetheart, it's time to go.
Yeah.
Well, that's him singing that.
Okay.
And he wrote that piece, one of the pieces that he wrote. So we used to go to Howell Theater to see him. And, everything is colored. It's just think about a wonderful time. We were talking about the other day. I said, talking about the good old days. They were really the good old days. You could walk down, you dress up, go to Howell Theater. I never will forget my first time at the Lincoln Colonnade. That was where the Eli people went, and they had to walk down to the club up by the liquor. In fact, it's still there, I think. You walk kind of down the side like under tunnel like, but it was all really like a big ballroom, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you had a coat checker there. You check your coats in there, you know. You went with the furs on. I had my little fur on, you know. And it went into the ballroom dancing, you know. And I think back in the day when the girls in D.C., come out here, the cotillion, which should all be there at the liquor colony. Because that's the only place that the blacks really had to go back there then. So it was, but as I say, you didn't miss it too much in D.C. because they had places for you to go.
Right.
That was like New York. 14th Street was like New York for the blacks. In New York, it was like us to here. And then all that changed when they assassinated Martin Luther King.
Okay. How did that change the environment?
They might have been burned down and messed up everything. But the blacks did it. They did it themselves, really. Instead of going downtown doing to the white, they did to the places up there. And so everything just got closed up there. You know, they just destroyed everything. And that's when a complete turnaround. That's what D.C. gets called, get the new bad name after that. Because everything that the black has to go to, they destroy it. But in retaliation for Martin Luther King, the blacks didn't do it to Martin Luther King. Somebody else did it. Whoever did it, you know. But they didn't go downtown. Because I used to shop downtown at Capitol West and F Street. A lot of the blacks didn't shop down there, really, because they didn't have them. They wanted to try on clothes in the stores and whatnot. But it just all depends on how you look when you went in the store. That's another problem, too. Because I used to borrow my clothes down there. That particular time, they had exclusive dress shops. You got something there, you didn't see it at the next place, next place, next place.
Right.
And I used to chop all my clothes at Kapowitz, and that was a Jewish place too, but they had exclusive clothes. I got a coat I got there, it's over 50 years old, a Bogana fur, and I still have that coat. So it was nice, and they had nice women dress shops downtown. Then on 7th Street, they had a Goldbergs, and they had a Landsberg, and a Cannes, and a Hex. And all those, you know, you can go by the names, hey, you know those Jewish names. They owned all those stores, because my mother used to shop at Goldberry. And there was a Horn Shoe store, and she used to buy shoes at the Horn Shoe store. We had to shop in D.C.
Okay.
All our department stores all in D.C. for black people. Sometimes they didn't want, blacks didn't come in. They had a Brooks and a Phil's mom. When you got a credit card there, you were supposed to be upper class then, I guess, you know. Boy. Tell you, it's something else you just think about. These kids don't realize what their foreparents had to go through.
Right.
They really don't realize that, you know.
How did Dr. King's death, I guess, change sort of the social consciousness of people in Falls Church?
I don't really think it bothered them to be radical.
Okay.
And I think it did, in a sense, to be overwhelmed, sorry. And I guess a lot of them felt they want to retaliate on something like that, but they knew. But you find most people up there is basically the old one. You know, they were sad, and they wanted something done about it because there was too much of this going on. Then it was Dr. King, then it was the Kennedys, you know, one right behind the other. So, and I guess I felt that, you know, we all felt it was motivated by the government, or the politicians, not the government, but the politicians. But who are we? Just moral individuals, so we can't set up and prove anything, or we just have our own thoughts about things. And it affected so just about every person in this Northern Virginia area, believe me. But even some of the whites, it affected when he was assassinated. Because he was, all he asked for equal rights. That's all he was asking for. He asked for no more. Just give us the same chance that y'all have. Same things, all he asked for. He didn't ask to put us in a higher or in a lower. Put us on the same level. Let us be able to go to a place and we qualify for a job, give us the same opportunity. Which we've been speaking for years. He just took a one-man crusade on, and the other one's falling behind him. And so, it was to be. What happened to him, what he did, it was to be. I think I can't compare him with Christ, but he was in the same realm, basically. He had a job to do, and he did it. And it cost him his life. So, like I said, he wasn't crucified, per se, but, you know, in a sense, he was assassinated. What's the difference, you know what I mean?
Right.
It was a man trying to do the right thing and to help the people. And he wasn't not necessarily asking for the black, he's asking for everybody to have the same equality. But Satan's busy. So when Satan's busy, you know, he steps in, and I don't know, it's just sad. It's just so sad. It really is sad, because he was going for a good thing. And, you know, I just look back at the time when people going down to Mississippi, those places down there, how they just kill the people, you know. How they did Emmett Till, you know, I remember that so well, you know. And a little innocent kid, how to mutilate his body and cut his head off, cut his throat and the genital organs and stuff like this, you know. And then they speak about what they're doing over in Saudi Arabia, which I don't condone any of that stuff. But do they realize what they've done to the blacks over here and still doing in some parts of it, which we don't know about? A lot of them, they found the boys' bodies all down there, they're called the Newington Five, I think, went down to Mississippi, and the Mississippi Burning, I think, was down there. And a Jewish boy went down there and tried to get the people to vote, to free the people, and they destroyed those people. You know, they don't have any common decency for anybody's life. But yet and still, they're going to criticize these people when they go into their country to do something. Well, what they're doing, get out of their place. They have a chance to get out and save themselves. But what did the poor blacks have a chance to do? Or the poor Indians may have a chance to do? You know what I mean? And they talk about terrorism. Who else terrorized this country but the Caucasian when they came here? They terrorized the Indians. They moved them from their land and put them on a reservation and took it from them. Do they ever sit back and think about what happened? You know, I just wonder about this sometimes. You know, you go to someone else's country and tell them how they should live, and you can't even keep your own house straight. And I don't know, it just amazed me. I can sit and think sometimes, I said, where are they coming from? You know, it just really amazes you. It really amazes you, you know, because we're supposed to have intelligent individuals running our country and doing things for us. But they're so busy sitting over there and messing those people over there. And you check the Bible, they've been fighting for years and years and years. And I don't think, like my daughter said, she's an avid Bible reader, the one I was speaking with Monique's mother. She said, Mom, she said, you know, it's not going to be no peace here until Christ comes back. It's going to be peace. And she says, whoever gets peace between the Palestinians and the Israelites, that's going to be your Antichrist. And I started thinking, I said, you know what? It makes sense. It really makes sense, because the devil's supposed to walk the earth for 7 years, and he could be turned loose, and nobody can be able to stop him. God not even going to stop him. It's up to you to make your mind which way you're going to go on the bandwagon with the devil, or stay back and be in the bandwagon with God. So, and it makes sense. I started thinking, I said, oh my God, you're so right. You are so right. Because it's not supposed to be peace until they accept Christ. And if they go over there and have to accept Christ and get peace, tell you something.
How did people who lived in this area make a living? What were different trades? Or
actually, most of the ladies who didn't get the federal government, and that was a blessing for the ones that could get into the federal government back at the time. When I was coming up here taking my time. My mother, they went into doing practical nursing, taking care of the older folk who are doing all housework, or as nannies, or as housekeepers, most of the female. And the men, likewise, they either did construction work, most of them worked in construction, and the few that could did property jobs as cooks or janitors or something like that. The job was menial, very. No matter, as I spoke about, the people down in Civil Service Commission, these guys had master degrees, biologies and chemistry and whatnot, to go to the federal government. They were adjudicators, how to go to GS-9. You go to government now, the white was up to GS-14 or 15, making that big time money, but not the blacks.
Was there an obvious distinction between the lower class blacks, or as far as income, or upper class and middle class?
Yeah, because you had some people in Virginia, this area here, if their father were teachers or doctors or lawyers, but not. There was a distinction in the living condition, because some of them had big homes and whatnot. The other one was struggling to try to make it. And like my mother, she was a practical nurse, and she went in the federal government. She had 5 children. My father thought I was the chef back when we were kids. He went into the federal government because he was a head naval dispatcher here in Arlington. They finally, but as the time when they had kids and whatnot, they struggled. Mm-hmm. They struggled. They had to go, she did housework. And actually, I used to go babysit for some of the ladies. We used to go make fitness on an hour. Mm-hmm. And used to go on Saturdays, because I used to wait, she'd wait for a lady named Mrs. Hinman, which she became friends with all these people, believe me. They became good friends of hers, as well as she was working for them. And as she quit them and went into the practical nursing work, then she went to the federal government. Then they visit her. In fact, when she was sick, before she died, Janet Glisson, one of the ladies she used to work for, her mother, Mrs. Glisson, Commander Glisson, who worked on Hillwood Avenue, she was a personal friend of my mom. They kept in touch with each other. Mm-hmm. And she called her up, and she came here to visit her. I guess I took some pictures of her and Janet together. Janet looked older than my mom, though, really. Mm-hmm. But she was the kind of person like that, you know, that once you know her, she was a lovable person. Mm-hmm. And even though she was an activist, whatnot, but she always gained your confidence. So that made a difference with her and people, because I don't think she disliked anybody, really, black, white, or green, or gray. I don't think she disliked anybody. I think anybody she could help, she would help. But basically, that's how they made their living. Most of them did housekeeping work or janitorial work, because even those that had, and the ones that went to be teachers, and someone worked, Mr. like my girlfriend, Barbara Williams Saunders, and she lived right across the street. Her mother was Miss Lola Saunders. Her father was a realtor. So, and then we had Dr. Johnson, and he was up there, crossing where the tenants live on the Adair Road. And then we had too many professionals, though. Because I went to a doctor in D.C., Dr. Gray, and back when I was a kid, there was a man called Dr. Ledrick. I can't even remember him, but my mom had told me. But my grandfather ran over me when I was about less than 2 years old, sitting on his truck, and he's going to a funeral, and my aunt looked at the window and said, oh my God, there she's up on the. So that time they had a high high up things like that, and little teeny wheels, you know. Because had it been in the car, I probably did. And my mom called. She was in D.C. because when I was staying with my grandmother. And so she cut my mother down. I think was my brother born. I think she was pregnant with my brother then. So we 18 months apart, my brother Gene and I. And she said, yeah, I'll come around. So I was past a little butterball running down the meter with Gibby Petzl. So I love it. I said, couldn't kill the old girl.
What do people in the area do in their spare time?
Most of the people did their work. They some of them belong to the household of Ruth and the lodges, and they work with the church activities, and they work at the school, help the school out with the parents, with the children and whatnot. They donated time like that. They did a lot of, they had to do it. Or they sit around talking. Back then, when I was a kid, they sit around, go to each other's house. Women sit around talking. They'd get the iron out. While one would be ironing, the other would be talking, bring up the news in the community in Falls Church, because I know my mom used to put some time, enough for the slip on, ironing clothes. Oh, golly. It wasn't too much for them to really do. But as they got time went on, my mother, Jane, she worked down at the James Lee School. Mm-hmm. Recreation Center. She was the president of the Civic Association, and she worked on the board, and she went to Urban League, and she was in so much. Church work was the main thing they did, church work. And she was a recording secretary of just about every organization she was in, because when she died, the briefcase for each one of them, I had to give back mm-hmm. to the people. The usher board, the nurses unit, the Elks, usher, the ladies auxiliary. Mm-hmm. She just for everything she was in. I said, how in the world could she keep up with all this stuff? Financial secretary. That's what she was. That's the recording. The financial secretary. So that's how the money and the mm-hmm. notes and all that stuff like that. So that's, I never saw. So she was a pack rat. Believe me, I had so much stuff to get rid of all this stuff. Oh, God.
What types of things did you do for entertainment as a teenager?
Basically, I said, we play ball and whatnot. Like, we didn't have too many things to do. A guy used to come up there to, we used to have a place called the Odd Fellows Hall. He'd come up there and show movies to us on the screen. And we used to go to the Odd Fellows Hall for movies. And I used to be on, I think it used to be on a Saturday nights. Friday, I think it's about twice a week, Friday nights and Saturday night. Billy, his name was, used to show the movies up there for us.
Well, was Odd Fellows, because that name's come up before, but we're not certain who they were. Were they a group?
It's called Odd Fellows. It was like a lodge.
Okay.
Like IBPOE, like the Elks and things like that. But it was called Odd Fellows. We had a household of Ruth, okay. And that was the part of that.
Okay.
It's called Odd Fellows Hall. Okay. And don't ask me how that name originated. I guess I have to look it up in the almanac to find out, really. But my mother, we belonged to the household of Ruth, too. We used to pay a little 10-cent dues, go up there, and we had the little rival up there. Something like the Elks do, the Moose Lodge people do, like that type of thing. Okay. But it was for the juveniles, and women were in the household of Ruth.
Okay.
And the kids would be in the large household roof, large. And that was those two buildings were located on the right hand side of Costa Street, left hand side of Costa Street, just when you get to the church.
Okay.
And that's where they show the movie up there. Because they didn't have a theater for the kids to go to. And then the other time we played for a team, we used to play baseball, and the crossroad team would play the Falls Church team, mm-hmm. the girls. And down on the field where James Lee School is now, there's a big field back there, baseball. We used to have baseball down there. My sister, Judy, was a baby. I used to carry her down and sit her on the side, and I'd be up there playing baseball.
Do you have recollection of a beer garden, a place called the Beer Garden?
Sure, okay. Yes, indeedy. Yes, and that's right down there. My girlfriend's father owned that. Mr. Okay. Allen's father owned the Beer Garden. Yes, indeedy.
And did you ever go there?
No, I was too young.
Too young? Okay.
Yeah, I was too young to go there, but we used to sit up in the window and peep out of the people down there. They go in there. Well, Barbara and I were good friends. Paul and I were good friends. And so now I spent a week in her house. They tore the house down there. It was right across the street on the side where James Lee's here. Mm-hmm. And right on this house, her mother's original house. And she died in state about 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, maybe longer than that. And both her sons had died preceding her. And they found her dead, sat up in a chair. But I spent the night at her house, and we used to be up at Pete Mother Wednesday there, but going to the beer garden, you know? Yes, indeedy. That's right down there called, I think it's called School Street now. I'm not sure what name of but I think it's called School Street, right down the same street where James Lee is, on the right hand side where the beer garden was. Yes, indeed.
Do you remember any of what were the black-owned businesses in Falls Church here in this area?
Well, only black-owned business I knew up there basically was Dr. Johnson off the doctor's office, and Mr. Alan Saunders had his own business, but I think it did from his house. He was a realtor. Mm-hmm. But I can't think of any other up there black-owned business in Falls Church. Oh, no, these people worked there. Mr. Henry used to be a shoe, they used to shoe horses down there, but he didn't own it. He worked there. We call him Little Daddy. They used to shoe horses down there. Mm-hmm. And I can't recollect any black-owned businesses. Okay. Not during my time.
Right.
Yeah, because it could be some more after that. Mm-hmm. And I can't recollect any black-owned business up there. Because I know my grandfather, he used to take our horses, he'd take his horses down to Buddy Gibson, he's the mayor of Falls Church. But I'm mistaken too. Oh yes, I take it back. Miss Mary E. Henderson, Mr. Henderson's mother, used to have a store in Falls Church in the city of, in the village. We called the village in Falls Church, because we used to walk up the steps to her store. And we used to get penny candy up there. Yes, I remember that. Yes. Miss Mary E. Henderson, Mrs. Henderson, Dr. E. B. Henderson's mother, had a little store up there. That's the only one I can remember when I was a kid growing up.
What kind of celebrations took place in Tenant Hill? Celebrations. Were there any kind of celebrations thing that the entire community came out to celebrate?
Not too much back there then, when I was a kid coming up. Most of the time, they'd come down to the school when they had May Day, mm-hmm. for the kids and all the parents would be down for the May Day celebration. But and when they have ladies auxiliary, we have dinners at the church and things. Mm-hmm. Oh, we have the homecoming. Homecoming to church. Like I said, basically the blacks didn't have too many places to go to celebrate too much stuff in there. But the church, they dealt most with the church all the time. Okay. Which was very typical back there then, really, because they had nothing else to do. Well, that was part of the race that way.
Right.
And then we had the homecoming, and everybody came to the homecoming, and we have services, and they have dinner, and people get around and talk, people you haven't seen, people in years who left and came back, you know. It's like a reunion, but it's called, we used to call a rally back there then. But now it's called homecoming. So I guess each generation changes names.
And you talked about being an activist, so to speak. When do you think you, I guess, became socially conscious? When would you categorize yourself as an activist? At what age?
I guess in the last 10, 15 years, more or less. I guess it's been there all the time, but by me working in the federal government. I was an activist then because I fought against everything then because they wanted to bring a lady in there for me. I guess that's when I start thinking you got to kick butts or do what you want to do or kick butts, you know. Mm-hmm. But I applied for the position and interviewed for the position as the chief of acquisition. I know I qualified for it because I've been detailed to the position so many times and I had enough letters to state how many times I've been detailed to it. But I never could get it basically because they would downgrade someone from a GS 12 to GS 3, from GS 13 to GS 12. So there was, I couldn't squawk about that because no one was promoted to it. And I was a GS 11, and I applied for the position, which I was detailed to that particular time. So I didn't know I had the job. And then, fortunately, I went to work one morning, and I happened to go on this white girl's desk and saw where she had hired a person from San Diego for the position. And this girl here was a supervisor or custodian or something. I said, what the heck is going on here? Well, I made a copy of her SF-171. So then I wrote a letter to my congressman. I sent my papers up there, my qualifications up there to my congressman. And he gave me a call the next day that he received my letter or whatnot. And I told him what was happening. And he sent a copy of this. He said, take care of it right away. And he sent a copy of it over to Office Secretary of Defense, and Office Secretary of Defense sent it to the Admiral on the post. Admiral sent it to our administrator. Why is she not promoted? I want to know within 2 weeks' time. 2 weeks' time, I was Elizabeth Hudson Hall, Chief of Acquisitions. So they had already hired this lady. So she came there, but I was her chief. But it just so that's what pushed, motivated me then. You know, I said, these are my rights. You know, why are they violating my rights, you know? and especially when it affected my livelihood. Because I know when I get ready to retire, I want the big money, nice money, too, to get a nice check, too. Because most of the blacks, they kept at a low-level grade. When they retire, they get a peon check. They had to go get another job in order to survive. Mm-hmm. If you want to take another job now to keep busy or something like that, something different. Mm-hmm. But in order to take another job in order for you to pay your bills and whatnot, it don't count. And you spend 30, 40 years in the government, and you don't have enough money to live comfortably on? Mm-hmm. It makes sense. So, and I retired that final. Only reason why I retired basically is because I would have stayed on for another couple more years, but my husband wasn't well, and my daughter in school. What I was talking about, she was getting a little bit of problems, so I had to. I said, and then they let me draw my retirement out, draw the whole amount out. Mm-hmm. They only did that for 1 year for people, and then you still receive your retirement. Mm. So, the guests were losing money. Like they know, I know they were losing money. So that was an opportunity. I took advantage of it. Mm-hmm. So I came out that following year in 89 in March. I went on retired. And right after I retired, 2 months after I retired, the whole section folded up. The girl got the position after I retired, mm-hmm. and section folded up. She couldn't carry it on. So, you know, from then on, mm-hmm. that was my thing. From here on, no one steps on me or my people or anybody that is in the African American race. You don't step on it. Then I started, when I started working at the community center. My mother got me into the Black Women United for Action, which is another group for black women to get ahead, to help each other. And the National Good Women Council, I'm into that too. And that's another nonprofit organization that helped the African American women, say. NAACP, I've been solicitor for them for years. And I work with the group, getting more people to join, even though I don't attend the meetings half time, because I don't like to drive at nighttime by myself. Right. And I'm on the board, I'm on the advisory board, I'm with the Springdale Civic Association here. And anything happening in the community here, and Penny Girls call me the mayor here. They call me. When I call them, I say, I want action. These people pay taxes. Y'all are under our employ. Mm-hmm. Because our taxes are paying y'all salary, you know. And I say, if you don't, I say, tell you what, when we hit meeting, I say, if we don't like what's going on, voting time, vote them out. Right. If you like what they're doing, keep them in. If you like what they're doing, that's your privilege to get rid of them. And I say, it's important that you vote. A lot of them, I tell the kids the same way. I take the application, I see them at the Sunday, when you be 18, September, October, sign up so you'll be able to vote in the November election. Mm-hmm. And I do this all the time with the kids, and I do it with the Civic Association. And I'm the one that got these signs up on the street down here, because mm-hmm. these people parking down here as dirty and filthy as they could be. These Spanish people, they would go to the church down here, and they eat the food, drop it all in front of my house. Or at nighttime, walking, picking up condoms on the street where they use the place for a hotel at nighttime. I got sick of it between Mr. Pitts and I. I got a petition up, and I walked around the community, got everybody to sign it. I said, this is for your benefit as well as mine. I said, if you don't stop in there, it's going to keep going on. You won't be able to go out the driveway, block your mailbox, block your entrance. And it went through. Finally got it through. It went before the board up there. They said, you're going. I said, I did my job. Y'all go up there. I did my job. When I got the petition through there, and I went to Penny Girls and whatnot, and from then on, everything, when they want something done, they call me. So I said, okay, we got to call Houston. He's the president of the Civic Association. So I said, let's get it together. And he got angry one night because people questioned. I said, look, sit down, Houston. You can feel negative and positive no matter what you're doing. I said, just stand and listen to what the people can say. Just tell. And then I got on the case. I said, look, every time there's something going on around for zoning and whatnot, we were under conservative area plan. Okay, that was up about 5 years ago. We were off of it. So he and Mr. Pitts and Burke and White and Woody and I went up to the zoning board, and we got it reinstated indefinitely. Mm-hmm. So this way, they got to build nothing but single-family homes here in this area. They cannot put up condominiums. They cannot put up no more apartments than what's already been here and already applied for. They can't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. So they want to do this, but they got to come before our civic association, and we can stop anything going on here. In a conservation area plan and things like that. And I said, when I call to tell y'all to come up there, I said, one person can't voice everything. I said, divided we lose, united we win. Mm-hmm. So when they see faces up there, they say, we're playing, because every face, every black face they see up there, they know it's a vote. So they know that they can go too, and they want their jobs too. So then I begin good response from them, you know. Mm-hmm. So I said, y'all gotta go. If you ain't gotta ride, come with me. I'll ride you on up there, you know. So I can stick with things like that in the community, anything. I say, you know, you've got to work together. If you don't, everything you got, because they want to take everything around. Because this area here, North Virginia area, is part of it, is the hottest land in Virginia. Mm-hmm. They want this land so bad. And I'm getting letters all the time. One man called me up sent me a letter and told me that, I said, don't send me any more letters, please. Well, you know, it's not illegal to do this. I said, I didn't say it was illegal or legal. I said, it's legal, okay. I said, but to me, it's intimidation because you got a lot of older folks around here, and you kind of offer a little bit of money, and to me, it's intimidating. I said, don't send me none because you can't intimidate me, and you don't see a for sale sign. He said, we can knock on people's doors. I said, don't come on my property, please. I said, don't knock on 36 or 40 Lisa Boulevard because I'm not selling you nothing, period. I said, even when I die, I fix so it can't be sold then. I put it for air property. So, he said, okay, he didn't come here. But he got some people down the bottom of the hill to sell, you know, and those people in their 70s and whatnot, you know, older than me, some are way older than me. Where are they going? You can sell it all over when you get 50, 60 years old. You're supposed to have things in the making then, you know. You're 30, 40 years old. Okay, maybe you can make, you got maybe 20 years or 25 years, you can pay it on off. But my God, who in the world wants to start that all over again? You get 60, 70 that time. You're supposed to be being tranquility then, you know. You don't need this hassle. And you can't buy nothing under $2,000 or $3,000 a month in this area. And you got to have over $200,000 a year, not gross pay, bring home pay, you know what I mean? In order to make it, because you got to think about these big houses they're putting up, you got to think about the electricity, you got to think about the air conditioning, you got to think about the heating in the winter months. I just don't say I didn't make it. I really don't. But I was looking at the paper the other day, and it was speaking about. I didn't realize so many electronic companies going up in Fairfax County. So this is what is happening. They did this back here, maybe about 30 years ago. They had IBM up here, and one of the first technology companies coming to Fairfax County. And down the bottom of the hill, they put a bunch of beautiful homes down there. Now, $300,000 back then was a lot of money for homes. And when IBM, those electronic companies folded up and went elsewhere, just put every house down there had a for sale sign on. Because those people lost their jobs. They had to move, see. So when you get government contracted thing, it's not a guaranteed thing. Because they can fold up any time. And then you can't bank on it. My perception all the time is the federal government was the best place to go because, you know, they ain't hard. Let's have a wall or something like that to just take the country down. But these companies and whatnot, and see, the blacks don't have a chance to get into these CEO jobs. Like, I mean, you see them in the evidence sometimes, the other states and whatnot, where the CEO, but not around this area here. You don't have them black people making big money like that. And you don't have too many whites either that in this area are going to come in to other places to this area. Mm-hmm. But I was looking in the paper of the real estate part, just put every name you see buying these big $700,000 homes, $500,000, are Asians. All of them. The name is Shamir, Muhammad, and whatnot. Very few American names you can find in it, believe me. Where did they get the money from? Mm-hmm. These people got the money, you know? And I said, they one coming over here, they buying up over here, and the other ones used up the economy. Used up the Section 8s and the whatnot. But I became an activist. I that's what I guess consider myself an activist, because I guess don't like seeing our people being stamped on and run over and being taken advantage of, you know. And there are a lot of things out here, because a lot of them didn't know, the seniors didn't know that they could get a tax reduction when they get a certain age, you know. Mm-hmm. First, they were under the impression that, oh, no, that when I get older or something going to happen, they can take my house. I said, no, that's not true. Because I had a brother-in-law was thinking that, because you got that tax reduction because of your age. I said, this has been going on for years. Right. The whites have been doing it for years, believe me. How do you think they keep be able to keep their homes when one passed away? Mm-hmm. And the woman was just there. Because they don't have to pay tax on the property anymore, or they pay a minimal amount. So they finally learned it. So, because a couple of times I would take my sister-in-law and fill it up for her, so she gets passed away the other day, though, too, because it's competitive. But I said, you can get this. It's not a poverty thing. It's a thing that's due you. Right. You've been paying taxes all your life, whatnot, and then you retire, whatnot, and you got what's coming. You can get this because you can't make the money. Prices and things are going, the economy is going up, whatnot, and you live in an area where you have to have this. And take advantage of it. And so quite a few of them finally learned that they aren't going to lose their property because they thought they could lose their property to the county. See, they misinformed. Mm-hmm. Misinformed. So I try to keep them abreast of things like that in the community.
Finally, my last question is, what is the Tenor Hill Museum and Cultural Center? Why is it important to you, or why would it be important to you?
Because it's a part of our history. Mm-hmm. And I think that every child that's coming up now should be able to go up and see things that have happened back here. preceding their time and what the people like that had to go through back there years ago. And many things they could get, if they could have videos and stuff like that, would be great for the children to see. And they need to know that. It's history for the black African American. And how basically it's also how they went together and started the NAACP. And a lot of them don't know about this because I used to go to all the NAACP banquets and whatnot. I think I keep all the books you get there, you know, with Dr. E.B. Hess' name in it and Mr. Joseph Turner's name in it. And see, these kids are not aware of this, and they should know. It's important to me because we need something. Everything else you got white this and you got the thing over with the Holocaust thing over in D.C., and you got everything for everything but us. And I think it's one of the greatest things that can be done, especially in the North Virginia area. And in North Virginia, with Southern State, I think it's great.
Are there any particular things that you'd like to see in the center?
As I say, videos be nice. And the history of Falls Church, as well as Turner Hill, so whatever they can put up in there, or something about the color school we had down there. And even towards some of the things. Barbara Saunders, the girl friend of mine that died, she had a book about that thick. Oh, what it was then and what it is now. That book disappeared. That would have been a fantastic thing to have there. Because it gives people the idea of what went on back years ago. Old police station, I think I got that. I think I got a copy of the old police station being Falls Church. I think I got quite a few of the old pickets, so I think I might make some copies of that too and give them to Edwin. Edwin has them. I think I do that because he don't already have them. But pickets like that would be great to be in there. What used to be up on the walls or something in there, you know. Or even a book that people can see. But you know, they should be put up because people like to take things, you know. And I think it would be great if you could have some pickets of the old Falls Church or the black back there. Old schoolhouse, and things in our back neighborhood, and I think that would be great for the children to see, you know. Or even to bring back memories of what they used to be, right. Too, you know.
Well, thank you, Ms. Hall, for talking with me today.
Okay, it was nice talking with you, too.